This is the Screaming Pods Network on ScreamingPods.com.
And now, on with the program.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Pilot Project. This is the show where we like to grow out our nasty mustaches, and Dustin and I like to travel around the country offering vast sums of money for first episodes of failed or weird TV shows to executive producers.
And if people don't acquiesce, we punch them in the face, or like poke them in the stomach and the abdomen with a pool cue.
That's right, we stalk them.
We just split one off and like cut it in half, and we both prod them at the same time.
Exactly. This time we're taking a show that has... definitely not successful on any stretch. It has rather the cult status. And if you ever wanted to, a show that was like Knight Rider but had less comedy, then My Mother the Car is the show for you.
Yeah, I would say it carries the cultural cachet of Heil Honey or something like that. Although this is a little bit different. It's kind of one of those like notorious shows. It's not something that people are like, oh man, this was really ahead of its time and something you should have watched at the This is one of those things like, oh, remember that show that had all these people that ended up doing better things later? This is where they all started, believe it or not.
Yeah, I think it's more famous for the jokes about it than it is for the product itself.
Oh, yes.
That man over there, my name is Mark, and that man over there is, he's my personal dick. He is the Dick Van Dyke to my Jerry Van Dyke. That's Dustin over there. And
although
today,
he is more successful technically, so I should be the Jerry.
That's okay. And today we're joined by our personal Captain Manzini. He always shows up when you least expect it. In fact, we just opened the door to the podcast studio here, and he was just sitting here waiting to podcast. We didn't know he was going to be here, but there he is waiting for us. It's Jerry Richard from NTX Beer, at NTX _beer on Twitter. And I guess you are a beer correspondent for the Dallas craft beer scene.
Yeah, really. I'm totally fine with being like just sort of a beer cheerleader, someone just like
aficionado.
Yay!
Yeah,
let's do North Texas beer.
And we cross paths with Jerry back when we were doing a beer podcast,
and a number of times lately.
We have lately, yes. Amazingly enough, yeah. I saw him a few days ago at Craft Beer Cellar.
And we ran into him at the Pedicolis anniversary a few months ago.
Yep.
So it'd been a while, but we just keep running into each other here and there. So we thought, well, Jerry used to be a podcaster, so here we are doing the Pilot Project together.
Yep.
And today we're talking about My Mother the Car. Mm-hmm. So the year was 1965. This show had one season, and it ran for a total of 30 episodes on NBC.
That is a long season.
It is, and it's because it didn't do well among adults, but it did really well among kids. And at the time, being that there were only three networks, the opposition programs were Combat! And Rawhide! and which were adult shows. So Combat! Was a military show, I believe, and Rawhide! Was a Western. And so this show was a little more silly in theory, and did better with the kids, so they left it on to try to recoup some of those costs, because there was nothing to really pump up the kids' market.
That kind of makes sense.
But after one season, you know, there were more jokes about it, I think, more jokes than success, and so it went down.
I'm just thinking of the modern comedy. They normally don't go more than maybe 22
episodes. Oh, no, that was, that's for sure, and if you don't get good ratings within, the first few weeks, you're gone.
Yeah, true, yeah.
So it really depends.
Unless Netflix picks you up or something.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah, we're in such a fragmented market now, too. I imagine this show probably I didn't see any information about ratings, but this probably had 30 to 50 million people watching it,
mm-hmm.
And was considered a failure.
Yeah. They said Green Acres was a lead-in.
Okay.
So, Green Acres and then this to try to pull the audience, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's astounding what used to be considered a failure today. even go back as far as the 90s, quote-unquote failures were probably 12 to 15 million.
True.
And now any network would kill for those numbers.
Well, now you have CW shows that last for 1.5 or 2.5 million people, and they consider those pretty successful.
Yeah.
And they get seven seasons.
I know. Yeah, pretty. It's interesting how much the fragmentation has done all that.
Mm-hmm.
So this was created by Alan Burns and Chris Hayward, who would go on after this to create The Munsters, Get Smart, and Rocky and Bullwinkle. Or maybe it was Get Smart actually came out in 1965 as well. But those were obviously way more successful shows. It was directed by Rod Amato. I guess that's how you say his name. He would, he did a little bit parts in acting, and he was mostly a TV director, directed, The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, which I was a big fan of back when he used to be on Nick at Night back in the day. And, he also did some Dukes of Hazzard and some other shows.
You loved it when he would sit outside in front of the Thinker and do the Thinker pose himself.
Loved it. No higher form of comedy than beatnik comedy.
Double Thinker.
All right. So as we always like to do, we always like to find, an enthusiastic review on IMDb, kind of talking about the show and what these users think, because IMDb tends to have some of the best reviews.
It was a little harder this time. There was a lot of actually really positive reviews, which was odd. I did not expect that.
Yeah, and it actually, for IMDb, gets really low ratings. Usually IMDb is skews towards the high side of ratings. This one did not. This one comes, this is from the city of San Diego, written by the city of San Diego, the whale's vagina, from March 16th, 2000. The quote says, nothing bad said about this show is true. One of the shortest running TV shows? Nope. Many, many have been canceled after 13 weeks, a usual trial run. One of the strangest concepts for a TV show? Nope. One of the worst TV shows ever? Nope. Turn on your TV now and turn the channels. Point made. Jerry Van Dyke is funny, always has been, always will be. He hasn't changed his style of comedy at all. Ann Southern was perfect as the voice of the mother, and I don't think her talent needs defending. What guy didn't have a relationship with his car in the 60s? Well, I didn't. I was not alive yet. It's called satire. It's just that not a lot of people watched. That's all. So goes programming, advertising, and the whim of the people. Now, if Nick at Night or TV Land will only have a My Mother the Car, Jennifer Slept Here hour, I will die a happy person and come back to life as a supermodel's bicycle seat. Now, that's a concept.
So what is Jennifer Slept Here? What is
I didn't bother to look that up.
Okay, all right.
Maybe it's the prequel to the movie Jennifer's Body. I don't know. The cast stars the aforementioned Jerry Van Dyke as Dave Crabtree. His wife was Maggie Pierce as Barbara Crabtree. She was a model before this. Ann Southern was a radio, film, stage, music.
Fairly successful person actually.
A multi-hyphen, yeah. She was the voice of the mother of the car, the 1928 Porter. Avery Schreiber, who looks like, you guys know Captain Lou Albano is? He was a wrestler in the 80s. And he was in the live-action Mario series. He was the live-action Mario.
He looks like any generic Italian actor.
Yes, basically. He looks like a stereotype. Yes. He looks like Captain Lou Albano's uncle.
Is he related to Liv Schreiber, I wonder?
That's a good question.
I did not look it up, but I'm just
I didn't
curious.
Either. I didn't. That's an excellent question. Maybe Liv Schreiber is actually the reincarnated Avery Schreiber.
There you go.
They do look more alike than Pablo Schreiber looks like Avery Schreiber.
So. That is true. Maybe after the break we'll find that out.
Maybe we'll find that out. Yeah. And we had the two kids, Cindy Eilbacher as Cindy Crabtree and Randy Whipple as Randy Crabtree. So a couple of generic kids in there.
Yep.
So the whole
very
premise,
generic kids.
Yeah. Basically, the show starts off is it's got a cold open. The first thing to
it's
note,
got a cold episode.
That's true. This entire show is a cold case. There's no laugh track to the show, which is bizarre.
Which, like I was texting with you, maybe that was a little bit ahead of its time, technically, because there were not very many comedies that did not do that prior to Arrested Development and shows like that.
True. Scrubs.
I'm not saying it didn't need a laugh track.
It really needed a laugh track.
But I'm saying that was kind of a weird concept for the time to not have one.
Well, one of the interesting things that came out during the season that people pointed out was the absence of a laugh track, and people weren't sure what things were supposed to be jokes and what weren't. I would contend that there's not really any jokes in this show.
Oh, we have a clip, part of the audio, that basically really hits that home, that there are times in the show where it just looks like this guy is a mentally deranged, like, lunatic.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when he jumps in the back seat, and it's like, what?
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true, yeah.
Let's see. Oh, is this the one where he's talking about, he's describing how his mother's the car?
Yes.
Okay, so
that's a very sad, scary part.
So we're jumping ahead a little bit, but later when he's telling his wife, who is just named wife in the show. She doesn't really have a name, at least in the first episode.
Yeah.
He's describing, he's already brought the car home.
Well, Barbara Crabtree, right?
Well, yeah, but they don't say her name in the episode. Yeah, true. She's just wife. Or your wife by the mother. Anyways, he's later defending the thought that the car is his mother to his wife. He's already announced it once in front of his kids, and they all thought he was insane. Then he played it off as a joke. Then later he's coming back, he's trying to prove to his wife again. And so, yeah.
Well, this clip is actually later in the original time that he's talking to his wife. I just picked a part of it that was a little bit later.
Was this when he...
Well, he starts off by saying, oh, no, it's a joke. But then he goes back and says, oh, no, this is actually really my mother. And this concerns the kids, too, because the kids, this is their grandmother, and they should be a part of this. And then he starts to talk about, you know, basically how this is his mother and what the car said to him and things like that. It's all in that same original scene when he first brought the crappy car home.
Gosh, when this car first talked to me, I didn't believe it was my mother. No, sir. I ask her all sorts of questions. Things that only my mom would know, like what year it was that I broke my collarbone. And she knew every answer. Then, and only then, did I realize that this car's mother.
So he sounds like a deranged lunatic.
It does. And just the way, especially the way he says it, you know, like car's mother, and you hear this music, like what?
Yeah.
No, you hear the music, and you don't get that in the audio clip. But if you see it, it's his wife with like this terrified look on her face, and there's no laugh track. There's just this ominous music in the background, like this generic like trumpets or whatever that is.
It kind of reminds me of like the way it's filmed is like an episode of Dragnet. And this is like an episode where the two cops, Friday and the other guy, the guy from MASH, like they would stumble on some guy that's been taking LSD.
Yeah.
And he's just killed his mother and he's having fantasies. This is how he's resurrecting her mentally.
And kind of the way that Jerry Van Dyke delivers it, too. It's like, well, this is my mother. And when I realized my mother was this car.
Oh, he's
he's
tripping balls on acid.
Yeah. He's got kind of like grumble voice. And he's like stammering over himself.
I mean, to be fair, that is Jerry Van Dyke's acting style, but, which is a curious style for sure.
Right. But I'm saying it adds to this scene. Yeah. It makes it even scarier.
So do you think they were also trying to go for bits of sadness as well as funny? Because again, like, boy, the first time they find out that, when he first hears a mother speak, there's a fear, like he's jumping out of the car and she tells him to, you know, lower his voice. I'm like, what's going on?
Like he busts his head through the roof in the beginning.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's like a fever dream. I really think that this is like, I think he's just killed his entire family. And as he's being thrown into the loony bin and they're about to do the electroshock therapy, maybe during the electroshock therapy, this is the fantasy that he's constructed in his head to absolve himself of his sins. This is kind of the feeling I get.
And let's remember, this guy is a lawyer. Would you want this guy representing you for anything?
No, no, definitely
not. There's no way.
No, no.
So I didn't mean to jump way ahead, but that's just kind of that's the theme of the whole episode to me.
Although
the
fever dream part is kind of funny, because it would be funny at the end of the whole series if he wakes up and realizes he's the car.
See, that would have been brilliant. See, then you would have justified the entire show.
Exactly. Or it's like the end of Mario 2, where the whole thing was a dream and it's as much of bullshit.
And he has to end up fighting a giant frog.
Yeah, exactly.
That even better. Well, it does kind of look like Mario. Or I guess Manzini looks like Mario, so it's appropriate. Yeah. So the whole show starts off with David is at a used car lot trying to find a station wagon for the family. And he stumbled around the lot and he happens upon this old car. It looks kind of like a Model T. The actual car was based on a Model T.
Not a real car, right?
Right. Not a real brand. The Porter car. It was supposed to be from 1928, 1928 Porter. Not a real car. Based on a Model T frame, touring frame.
Mm-hmm.
But he decides to get inside this car and just fart around with it. And the car starts speaking to him. The car is all busted up. It's you know, rusted over and car starts talking to him. The car starts talking to his mother's voice, and he of course thinks he's going insane. No surprise.
Which, who wouldn't?
Yeah, and somehow the mother persuades him to, like, she basically says, "I came back to help you." Most people don't. What did she say? She was talking about. Oh yeah. Most people don't choose to be reincarnated. But when we do choose that, when we sign on the dotted line, we don't get to choose how we come back. But I came back to help you. So it's pretty interesting. So just to set the time frame here, this was 1965 when the show came out. So when the 1928 was 37 years before.
Right.
So to put it in perspective, this is like him going to the lot, or us going to the lot, and we're picking up a 1982 Ford Falcon or something like that. So this is kind of that same time frame, you know.
Right.
Because we're in that era in the, you know, the mid-60s of all the great cars, the giant boats of cars, like the T-Birds and stuff like that, the old Oldsmobiles and stuff like that. Sweet, sweet giant rides. And he's getting into an old jalopy, basically.
Yeah,
so,
true. Yeah.
That's that. And right after that, we get into the theme song for the first time. For the first of three times, I think, that we hear.
Three times in the episode, yes.
Three times.
You got in the beginning, got in the middle when he...
And the full theme song, too.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
The full theme song.
He revamps the car, and then the ending credits, yeah. So you get it three times.
And this is like when we watched the original Star Trek pilot, where they had the Star Trek theme right in the middle of the show when they're going to warp, and you play the entire theme.
Right.
It's very reminiscent of that.
Everybody knows in the second life we all come back sooner or later. As anything from a pussycat to a man-eating alligator. Well, you all may think my story is more fiction than it's fact. But believe it or not, my mother did decided she'd come back as a car. She's my very own guiding star. A 1928 Ford. Dear, she helps me through everything I do, and I'm so glad she's here. My mother, the car. My mother, the car.
I hate the horn of that car so much.
Yes.
It is.
Oh, I have another clip with that.
Oh, I know, I know. Well, we'll get that when we get to the introduction of Captain Manzini. But yes. I got to say, as theme songs go on our show, that's one of the better theme songs we've had. I mean, it's
kind of catchy.
It's catchy. It's annoying how much it's played, often it's played, but it is catchy as hell. And it's interesting how it's story carded or whatever. It looks like a kid's book or something. So you can sing along with the theme song.
Well, it's also one of the most fun parts of the episode.
True.
Whatever that's playing.
It is probably the most humorous part of the episode. For sure.
It makes sense why kids would enjoy that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a sing along.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just funny that everybody knows in the Second Life. Oh, really? Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. Well, you made an...
Somebody manning the alligators come back. That's normally where reincarnated is.
Yeah. I mean, you made an interesting point before we started recording about how in the 60s it was an interesting transition point of culturally speaking, because we were just getting into the Vietnam War, we were into the civil rights movement, all of culture was shifting in a very much to the left of where we had been. We were going from a very conservative society emotionally and otherwise, moving more towards the left for a more liberal environment for a while, for lack of a better term. So it's interesting that you pointed out that they were able to talk about reincarnation, but they still the couple still had their beds separated in the bedroom.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Still couldn't push their beds together.
Yep.
And you still couldn't say the word pregnant on TV.
Right.
Yep.
As my wife pointed out, although Lucy from I Love Lucy show was the first pregnant character on TV, but they still weren't allowed to say pregnant.
Yep.
So you still had to say with child or something like that, or just not even mention it. The fact that that the baby was coming, or well, they like could say the baby was coming.
Just watch the second season of Miss Maisel on Amazon, and there's a whole pregnancy bit when she's actually performing her stand-up where she gets run out of a place for mentioning pregnancy.
Yeah, I need to finish that season two. But yeah, it's an interesting time.
It's probably one of those things where it's fine to talk about it when it's a comedy.
Right.
It's fine to talk about transmigration or reincarnation when it's a comedy now, but when it gets serious, and that would come later in the 80s, say like with, not 80s, 90s, Shirley MacLaine's movie. Out of the Shirley MacLaine's movie, she had a book.
Oh, she was dealing with it. I can't think of it. I know what you're talking about.
But that's when it got it got serious, and a lot of people were like, "Oh, you know." But as long as it's a comedy, I think they were okay with it. But it's still
sure.
So she goes on. Mother then goes on to tell him how she died on August 23rd, 1949, and to prove to Jerry Van Dyke that she was who she says she is. She's not just a demon that's inhabited the body of a car.
That was later in the car.
Exactly. That's when she becomes the car Christine, ends up killing everybody.
Indeed.
So the interesting thing was that, just to put it in perspective here, more numbers, fun with numbers. So when the show came out, Jerry Van Dyke was 34 years old. So that means that he was 18 when she died.
Right.
I mean, she died probably really young.
She did, yeah.
As a mother. So that obviously, another reason why he's probably going insane is because he experienced that loss at such a young age.
Sure.
This means he's probably been tipping over into psychosis for, like another 20 years or so. So he's tipping over in insanity, and he's just killed his entire family, and now he's absolving himself. He probably killed his mother. It's probably a Bates Motel situation or something.
Maybe so, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's absolving himself as he's getting thrown into the loony bin. This is the fantasy he's constructed for himself, is that his mother's been reincarnated as a car and can help him get through his daily struggles of, getting out of the loony bin. So...
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to approach this episode. There's definitely that branch. there's the branch.
I like the fantasy perspective of trying to find some meaning here.
That would be a great reason to bring it back. I'm telling you, we end where he becomes a car. Boom.
I like that. I like that. He's the car the entire time, and he's been talking to his mother.
Yeah.
His mother, her son died in a tragic accident, and she's trying to absolve her own sins because maybe she was drinking and driving at the time.
Well, that's funny that we talk about that, because I also heard the last episode, apparently there's like some quote-unquote banditos or something that go in and like try to steal the car from him at gunpoint.
Lovely.
But they could not show the guns in the episode, so apparently they did a bunch of different manipulation to imply that a gun is there, but did not actually show it. And... because the executives thought it was too serious, they decided to go ahead and throw a laugh track into that episode.
Yeah, I was going to say.
To end it.
A lot of people think that, like I said, the laugh track had been removed, and some of the episodes have the laugh track on there.
Just some of them. They didn't always have it, but just occasionally they would put it in if whoever was reviewing it thought it needed it.
Yeah.
Which is really unstable.
It's really weird. It's weird they couldn't show guns. I mean, didn't they show guns on Dragnet? Other shows?
Gunsmoke on at that time?
There you go. Gunsmoke, Rawhide. Well, it's weird they couldn't show
Rawhide. Yeah.
Maybe it was the hour of TV. Maybe
pointing it at someone was different too. I don't know.
Maybe. That's really bizarre.
But pointing it at someone, and also a comedy.
I guess
they want to take it there for a comedy.
I guess because maybe...
And they're aiming it towards kids, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it's still really strange, though, given how popular the Westerns were. Yeah, that's a good point. I think the only line I really enjoyed in this episode was when the mother mentions that... So she's been reincarnated, and she mentions that now she knows there's a team called the Mets, and if that's possible, anything is. I thought that was the only funny line in the show because it reminds me of the same beef I have with the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
That it's the dumbest name in sports.
Yeah.
Because you're naming yourself after a citizen of your state. Yeah. So, and the New York Mets are the Metropolitans. So you're just naming yourself after your citizens? I don't know. It's lazy naming. Although, to be fair, the Mets were named after a team called the Metropolitans from the 1880s.
True.
So at least they were trying still. It's still a dumb name. I still hate the Houston Texans because it's a terrible name.
No, it's a terrible name. Oilers was much better.
Yes. It's a lazy name. It's lazy naming. That's what it is.
I agree.
I remember when that whole naming contest came out around the Texans that there were so many better options. I can't remember what they were, but I remember, and then
Texans. Anything would have been better than that.
Then they finalized on Texans, and it's like.
Yeah, I agree.
Why didn't you just keep the Oilers name? It's terrible.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. So. Just for a little perspective, the Mets had only been around for 3 years when the show came out. So this is after the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Baseball Giants had left for California.
Yeah.
So they needed another team. They were threatening to start up a third baseball league at the time. And so to fill the gap in New York, they created the New York Mets.
Ah, okay.
And so they have the same colors. I think it was the blue for the Dodgers and the orange for the Giants. That's why the New York Mets have the colors that they have. So, anyways, little fun fact there. I know normally we reserve our fun facts for the second segment, but
had so much fun. I appreciate that.
JVD buys the car for $200, and on the
Jerry Van Dyke.
Oh, sorry, Jerry Van Dyke. I call him JVD for short. He buys a car for $200, and on the way home, the mother explains to him how he's going to convince wife by telling her that the engine is worth way more than the car.
Which is kind of stupid, but
it is how he's going to justify this purchase. He was supposed to go there to buy a station wagon.
And can I just ask, why is the mother afraid to talk in front of any other family members?
Yeah,
I don't understand that.
So let me ask you this: this is the Mr. Ed of shows with talking cars as opposed to horses.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Did Mr. Ed talk to the wife, or was it just Wilbur?
Did Wilbur have a wife? I don't even remember.
Yeah, Wilbur had the wife.
Okay. I don't remember him talking to
him. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have a show with a confirmed bachelor on that
probably
time.
Probably not. But
TV seasons.
No, I don't remember, actually.
I don't think he ever talked to the wife. I think it was just
Wilbur. But Mr. Ed was an easier concept to sell that you have a horse in a barn opposed to some shitty car you're just buying as your main vehicle transportation.
That's true.
So, yeah, I kind of understand that more, but... Yeah, I thought that was really weird. Like, if that's really his mother and he's not, you know, we don't go down the other branch where he's insane and killed everyone.
Yeah.
Why would she not talk to
the
mother or the kids? Or why did she not want to talk to her grandchildren? I mean, what the hell kind of grandmother is this woman?
Yeah, what kind of terrible woman are you?
Yeah.
And I do wonder, like, not that I'm going to go back and watch all the episodes. Most of them are on YouTube, by the way.
No, okay.
Or you can buy it on the entire season one on Amazon for $99 if you want to, if on DVD. $99.
I think I'll skip that.
Not a purchase I'll be making. Wow. But, I don't know. Terrible grandmother.
I mean, unless it's just a thing where she just wanted to be there with her son, which then asking for other issues. Like, okay, is it just what you're saying? You come back to help your son, but you know he's married now. You know he's got. So what's up?
Yeah,
you're really fucking him over.
Yeah, you really are.
Well, sure.
Yeah, you're coming back to make things worse for him, not better.
Right.
We know he's about to mentally break down. But come on.
Mm-hmm.
The wife, of course, is a nag, because what sitcom isn't complete without a naggy wife?
She is, but I also would say for 1965, she's rather in charge. Like, basically says, I'm going to go ahead and get rid of this car, and he has to convince her, later in the episode.
She pulls out the for sale sign, and said, well, give me a second, okay, the time for me it takes to find out, the bill of sale.
Yeah.
I was like, going, okay.
Yeah, she...
I'm surprised for that era, though.
That's true.
Normally the guys run everything, but she was pretty much like, oh, fuck this car, it's out of here.
She did wear those Laura Petrie pants, probably more than Laura Petrie did.
True.
The Laura Petrie pants. But yeah, she definitely had, like, firm rein on old Jerry Van Dyke here.
The show was 1965?
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke ran through 66. Why was it always black and white?
This was one of the earlier color shows, I think, so... I don't know.
Like a little less famous brother got a color show, and Dick Van Dyke stuck with black and white all the way through 66.
This is also the first year that they had the first color football game on TV. I mean, it was just of the time. Like, not every not everybody was filming in color yet. And true. Most people obviously didn't have a color TV set. So
yeah, true. Yeah.
Not many shows. I mean, this one still got aired in black and white, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
On top of that. But
and yeah, plus, now that it was in color, you could see how popping the car looked when they
that's true.
That's did. True. Yeah.
That's true.
If you've done that in black and white, you'd be like, going, what? I can't see what they did with that car.
Yeah.
Which is a great plot point to actually cover. The whole car wash scene and all of that.
That was just bizarre.
Bizarre. Yes.
Yeah. With a capital B.
Oh, man.
Just bizarre because he, as you pointed out yesterday over text, he goes to take the car washed before he gets it remodeled, yeah. Which makes no sense.
None. I mean, you got soap suds coming through the roof. I'm like, oh, yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah.
You had to walk through the car wash?
Why? I didn't get that plot point. What was up with that?
When did he get out of the car? I never saw him get out of the car.
I don't know.
But why did he get out of the car?
Well, the bumper fell off, remember? Because okay. I guess apparently in 1965, they like tied a chain to the front of your bumper and ran the car through.
Oh.
So the bumper fell off, so he had to push the car through to make it go all the way through.
But isn't that still the job of the workers and not Jerry Van Dyke?
I would think, but he, you know, for that extreme comedy, they went ahead and let him do it.
And
they,
just everybody just standing there looking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
I know. That was I must have missed that plot point of the bumper breaking
off.
We'll
go somehow. Watch it a third time.
I watched
time
it twice, yeah. And I missed that vital plot point because I was just mystified. Why is he going through the car wash?
That is why. The bumper fell off. Yeah.
I was busy rubbing my head. Like, what?
It's very strange. And then at the same time, I know we haven't quite gotten to his entry point in the show yet, but Captain Manzini follows him through the car wash in his own car. For some reason.
Well, we've talked about it because he came to the house and...
Yeah, we just haven't played the clip yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess we get to that.
So, we do get to the intro of Captain Manzini, who is this guy who, looks like a real-life Mario of the Mario Brothers.
Yes.
The Super Mario Brothers. And he's this guy that is a rare car collector. And he shows up... First of all, how many laws were broken by the dealership by giving him the address of Jerry Van Dyke?
Good point.
He shows up in there to say, I will give you $400 to your $200 that you paid for it to have this car. I've always wanted this car. And he refuses because, of course, it's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the entire rest of the episode is him upping his ante to get... To get the car, and that's the plot for the rest of the episode, essentially.
And basically calling his last name whatever, because he can never get it right.
Because, you know, that's high comedy, yeah. To continually get the last name wrong.
Call him Crab Butt and stuff, yeah. It's Crab Tree, and like, oh, look at that, he didn't say it right.
Yeah, when he first shows up on the scene, it's not only the introduction of a really annoying character, but we also get the extended car horn honking
scene. Oh, we do.
Which, by the way, the name of the episode is Come Honk Your Horn, so I guess it's appropriate.
There we go.
I'm an antique car collector. I heard there was a 28 Porter for sale over on the used car lot. When I got there, it was gone.
Yeah, I bought it.
So I see. Are you a collector, Mr.?
Crabtree. David Crabtree. No, I'm not a collector.
Well, I'm interested in buying this car.
Why?
I've searched all my life for this vintage classic, and you beat me to it, you sly one. Well, I'll give you $400 for it. That's twice as much as you paid.
$400?
Uh-oh.
I'll fix it. It's a simple matter of disconnecting the klaxon feed cable.
God, I hate that horn so much.
And the music, the way it starts up, just like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
It's like My Mother the Car's version of Benny Hill or something.
Yes, yes. Well, that's how you know it's comedy, right?
Yeah.
True.
Captain Manzini, he reminds me of like Dick Dastardly from the Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
I don't know if he was the inspiration for that character or vice versa, because Dick Dastardly came out probably around the same time, or, you know, early to mid-60s.
Yeah.
All he was missing was Mutt Leib side by side. Also, you know, driving wacky cars.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. He had that nasty mustache that looked like it was like the source of all HPV, probably.
Yeah,
he did not.
It was crusted with some kind of infection.
He did not use, you know, handcrafted small batch free range beard oils on that thing.
He did not, no.
It was disgusting. That mustache was gross.
And I like that, like the dog was always used for comedy. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the dog hates DVD. He also hates this guy.
Like, yeah.
Or JVD, excuse me.
He hates
maybe
DVDs
hates DVD
also.
Too. I don't know.
Not a fan of the format. More of a VHS exactly. fan.
Maybe he hates his brother too. I don't know. But yeah.
Betamax.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Betamax fan. Yeah, that was. I hate Manzini so much. And he was. The weird thing was, like, okay, he's a character from one episode. But he's in almost every episode of the show down the line trying to get a hold of this car. And that's the whole thing by the end of the show where JVD's trying to convince wife that we should hold his car because Manzini is going to keep upping his offer to acquire the car. This is because his mother tips him off to say, well, you should get Captain Manzini to offer you $1,500 in front of wife. And so he does that, and then JVD refuses the offer, and the wife, Nagy wife, finally sees the, oh, there's value in this car. You're such a sly husband.
You know how else it could have helped is if the mother just told the wife, hey, I'm the mother of this guy. And I'm in this car.
That would have,
don't sell it.
I know. That would have solved maybe the entire, entire thing.
On its own.
How much money could they have made if they had proved that reincarnation was a real thing?
No, that somehow. Too, yeah.
Or the wacky hijinks of you try to make money off of it and everybody's skeptical and there's that whole thing of people trying to prove and disprove that she's real. Like a million other ideas for the show than just one nasty mustache guy trying to acquire the car.
Yes, exactly.
Which, by the way, where did Captain Manzini get all his professionally made signs? Did he go to the 1965 Kinko's and
the one that says $800 and stuff?
Yeah, he's continually whipping out
please.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man, it's ridiculous.
Professionally made signs of the time, and even the wife has strangely
a for sale sign. She has
a for sale sign, professionally made.
Maybe they're working together.
Yeah, maybe they both have portable Kinko's printers of the time.
True,
yeah. Space age technology.
There you go.
Yeah, very, very, very bizarre. So then we get to the car wash scene where apparently all it takes to remodel a car is a car wash and 1 hour's worth of work at a mechanic, the car clinic, as it was called.
Like I said, that car clinic should be making millions if they're able to rehab a car in like a matter of 2 hours.
Yeah, because they
make it look that
it's
good.
Not like they just take a rag to it. I mean, when it comes out, it looks brand new. A new paint job, new bumpers, new everything.
Yep.
It's basically a new car. So that's all it takes, and he's waiting around. And somewhere along the way, between going through the car wash and getting home, Jerry Van Dyke changes into a Don Draper suit. He just happened to carry a Don Draper suit with him.
He obviously had the money. I mean, he obviously paid more for the remodel than he did.
For the actual car.
The car.
Well, now he had to recoup his money and keep upping that offer to Captain Manzini for sure.
And don't forget, that's a prime opportunity to throw the theme song in again.
That's true.
After he leaves the remodel.
Yeah, we had that. Yeah, on the way home, just like the Enterprise going through warp for the first time, we had to get the entire song on the way home.
The entire song.
The entire, literally the entire song. And then at the end of the day, we've kind of talked about it already. The mother convinces him to get Manzini to offer $1,500, at which point, in front of the wife, at which point the wife realizes the value and says, oh, I have such a sly husband. I love you. Let's go make out in the bedroom.
Exactly.
In our two-bedroom.
Now I don't think you're crazy anymore.
Yeah, now I don't think you're crazy. Yep. And thus issues in 29 more episodes of My Mother, the Car.
And it is very interesting how she switches.
Yeah.
I mean, she was all
Oh, she down. Turns on a dime.
And I mean, as soon as the $1,500 is offered and the guy goes away, she's like, oh, okay, whatever you want. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. All it took was $500 more dollars.
Yeah.
Absolutely bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. I don't know. I don't know that, you know, I tried to evaluate this from the perspective of Esther, who was with us last episode.
Yeah.
And she noticed all these black background things, and I could not find that much to really glom onto.
Well, there wasn't like a lot of set design and stuff that she pointed out this time. It was mostly just like running around in the car and then outside of that. Did they go inside the house? I don't even remember them going
Inside. They did in the bedroom at one point. They're in the bedroom. When he takes Nagy wife out to the garage to see, to try to prove that
you're
it's
right.
Mother.
Yeah, they're inside for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, which apparently, I guess, mother is, first of all, not very good at sneaking.
You're right. We saw the split bed, so they had to be inside for that. Yeah.
Not very good at sneaking is Jerry Van Dyke because he talks at full volume and then expects mother not to have heard and see the wife coming up. And I guess mother also has omniscient senses. Because she can see behind her, in front of her, inside the car, outside the car.
Yeah.
She's omnipresent.
Wow.
Yeah. So, just bizarre. And I had to wonder, too, like, did they not have another car? Was this their only vehicle, I think?
I think so, yeah.
So, how did he get to the dealership?
Good point.
It's not like they had 1965 Uber.
Right.
I guess they could have taken a taxi.
That's a very interesting point. You're like, well, how did he get up there? Take the bus?
I guess.
They're probably buses and taxis at the time.
Yeah, probably. Sure. Yeah. It seems like an important connecting point. Why not?
But what happened to their old car where they're replacing it for a new station wagon?
Exactly. Maybe took that car and sold it and then acquired mother.
True.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, which, by the way, does it seem kind of like an edible fantasy that he's inside his mother, driving his mother?
That right there.
Indeed, sir.
I could not help thinking that the second time I watched it. I was like, this is kind of edible.
You really read a lot of layers I did not try to pay attention to.
I was trying to find the high points.
You're closer to your mother than I am, apparently.
An edible complex is a higher point
this
than the
This is kind of where I was going as far as her coming back to help him and not showing herself to the rest of the family, because it was really about the connection she had with him.
Yeah, it's kind of that Hamlet and Hamlet's mother situation, or Oedipus and his mother. It's kind of Oedipal that he was inside his mother driving around.
See, today this could never work because you could just like start recording on your smartphone and then sit in the car and they'd talk to you and be like, see, she's talking to
me. She's still alive. Although, to be fair, it's not like wife would have known what she sounded like. I'm assuming that they were not together when they were 18, that she probably never heard mother. Like,
I would assume
not. Mother was killed at a tragic young age, and so she's never heard mother.
Nope. True.
So she, I mean, could have been, she would have known there's a voice coming through, but maybe she thought it was another silly prank by Dave, by Dave Crabtree. Somebody's rigged up the radio.
Silly prankster, yeah.
Why, Dave, it's just the radio. It's some prank on all of us. It's like War of the Worlds. Remember that in 1943 or whatever that was? Yeah, Shane, talks about Rescue, Shane.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Soupy Sales on the radio, see?
Soupy Sales.
Yeah, the only thing I found out, like, fun fact was on the music. Not the guy singing, but the composer for the show, Ralph Carmichael, who is mostly known, a lot known for his gospel stuff. He did stuff with Light Records and later was had people like Andre Crouch on his label and then Brian Duncan and all those people like that. So I just found that like a funny side fact. Like, oh, he was involved with the show. Interesting.
Well, speaking of fun facts, we have not a lot. We've got some fun facts we'll go through right after this.
Mustang. Mustang. Move into the cool world of Mustang. Now Ford brings you a third Mustang for 1965. The Mustang 2 plus 2. The 2 plus 2 looks and acts like a $5,000 sports car, but it carries a price tag that's thousands less. Mustang 2 plus 2, available with front disc brakes, a 289 cubic inch V8, a special handling package for a rally tight ride. Mustang 2 plus 2, full of surprises. Like side louvers that work to keep fresh air flowing through Mustang's cockpit. And a fold-down rear seat. Now there are three Mustangs for 65. See them at your Ford dealers Friday, September 25th. See why 1965's the best year yet to go Ford. The Swinger, the incredible new Polaroid Land camera for $19.95. It talks to you. Swing it up and take a look. Then turn the knob until it says yes, right in the viewfinder. Okay, you've got the right setting. 10 seconds later, you zip off a perfect black and white picture. The Swinger freezes action. It's always in focus. And it gives you beautiful close-ups. Incredible, especially at $19.95.
Hey, meet the Swinger. Polaroid Swinger. Meet the Swinger. Polaroid Swinger.
It's more than a camera. It's almost a lot. It's only
$19.95. Swing it up. It says yes. Take the shot. Count it down. Zip it off. Hey, meet the Swinger. Polaroid Swinger. Meet the Swinger. Polaroid Swinger.
Class attention. Forward march. Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
A big parade is so inspiring.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not an Oscar Mayer wiener. That is what I never want to be. Cause if I were an Oscar Mayer wiener, there would soon be nothing left of me. Oh, I love to be an
Oscar Mayer wieners are all meat, all good meat. Rich and complete meat protein, mildly seasoned to bring out all the good meat flavor.
Everyone would be in love with me.
Next week, you'll handle just the refreshments, Freddy.
All right, well, let's get to some fun facts. I cannot talk today.
Let's get to them soon, yes.
Let's get to them soon, and let's talk about some fun facts. IMDb
No, I was just going to say, this is a liquored up Mark for months.
It is.
You know,
that's true. I'm usually not drinking.
He's actually drinking some whiskey. So.
IMDb it gave it, surprisingly, for IMDb, a surprisingly low score of 4.7 out of 10. Normally, IMDb like skews towards the high side.
True, yeah.
I don't want to say anything about the demographics of their the intelligence of their commenters, but let's just say they tend to like really stupid stuff.
Yeah, true.
So Metacritic had no score. Rotten Tomatoes had no score. Now, Amazon, we mentioned that you can buy the DVD set there for $99.99 for all 30 episodes. So if you are so desperate, if you, some reason,
you want to drop $100 on 30 episodes.
Rather than going to YouTube and getting all the episodes for free.
But what about Amazon Prime?
No, it's still $99.99.
Even on Amazon Prime to stream it?
Oh, no, it's not streaming. It's just on DVD.
Just a physical DVD.
Yeah. You can find all episodes on YouTube for free if you want. If you want to come watch Come Honk Your Horn over and over and over again, feel free. But if you really want to collect those DVDs, feel free. You can go to Amazon and do that. But they skewed really high, too. 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
The show.
Well, and like I said, TV.com gave it like a 7.7 out of 10.
Yeah, yeah. And TV Guide, we forgot to mention, TV Guide named this the second worst TV show of all time. It was only beaten by The Jerry Springer Show.
And you know, I would disagree with that, because I think Jerry Springer has got its own special niche.
Right.
Like, it's supposed
completely
to be
different.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a completely different show. I agree. I like The Jerry Springer Show. I mean, at least back in the day.
I mean, for what it is. Yeah.
For what it is, yeah. It really ushered in an era of trash TV. So we mentioned that the show is probably more known for the jokes about it than it is the actual show. Apparently, Johnny Carson was kind of, I don't know if he's the originator of this, but he, after the show aired, he continued to make jokes about the show routinely in his monologue for over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, he kept that going. It ended up appearing in The Simpsons. So James L. Brooks, who was one of the writers for My Mother the Car, went on to be a producer of The Simpsons to this day.
I thought it was like a co-creator of The Simpsons or something.
Might have been a co-creator also, but he was a stat. He didn't write this episode, but the one we're talking about today, he wrote some of the other episodes, and he's definitely the most successful of the entire production. He wanted to create Taxi and is still a producer on The Simpsons today. They actually had a My Mother the Car based episode in season 8. The episode was The Simpsons Spinoff Showcase. So
that actually might be funny to see.
Yeah, it might be. We mentioned that on as far as the laugh track goes, some of the episodes have laugh tracks, some don't. The criticism was people didn't know when to laugh at the show. They didn't know when the jokes, what were jokes and what weren't jokes. It's really hard to tell.
It was really hard to tell.
Really hard to tell, yeah.
It was.
Some more fun with numbers here. So money-wise, so David bought Mother for $200. If you account for an average inflation since 1965 of 699.09%, that means he bought the car in 2019 dollars for $1,598. So now when Manzini offers him $400, he doubled his price in 1965 dollars. That means he offered him an equivalent of $3,186 for the car. And finally, with the last offer of $1,500, that is now equivalent in 2019 dollars to $11,986. So a good chunk of change. For Mother.
Would you sell your mother for $12,000?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I would sell it for $200.
Yeah.
let's see. From a retrospective from Vulture, they said, when the hybrid car woman says to an exasperated David, I came back to help you, not to get you into fights with your wife, it's probably the funniest line of the series. It was not funny intentionally. Many contemporary shows, including The Simpsons and Arrested Development, which were kind of viewed as actually good, have used My Mother the Car as the butt of a joke. As we said, it's kind of known more for the jokes. It was viewed as really the epitome of dated, stupid, campy, embarrassing, lowest common denominator television. From there on, Alan Burns and Chris Hayward, who created this show, they wanted to create actual successful, funny shows like the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Rhoda, Mary Tyler Moore,
Rhoda,
Lou Grant.
I still have not seen an episode of Lou Grant.
I haven't either.
Which was a drama, right? After Mary Tyler Moore?
That's why I haven't watched it, because I'm not interested in a serious drama about Lou Grant.
I don't get it, but it was successful. So and then they also went on to do Get Smart the same year. They did The Munsters, they did Rocky and Bullwinkle. I mean,
Barney Miller,
they were pretty successful.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, I think it was Manzini, the actor, Avery Schreiber, I think he went on to star in Barney Miller, like several episodes of Barney Miller. Yeah,
we forgot to look up in the break if he was related to Liv Schreiber, but
it'll forever remain.
Everyone can go ahead and look that up on their own.
Yeah, you can do it. Have fun with your own fun facts. as we mentioned, it was not canceled until the first season was over because it was a hit with dumb kids. It was up against Combat and Rawhide, which were adult shows. The sitcom had many comic miscues, as we mentioned. Nobody knew when to laugh. In addition to the ridiculous plotline, the creators sent confusing and contradicting messages to the viewers using different cinematic techniques. The producers, they didn't use laugh tracks, so nobody knew when there were supposed to be jokes. And in some scenes, the dialogue is comic, but the cinematography, as I mentioned, looked, it was way more dramatic. It looked more like a Dragnet episode.
Yes.
So it was kind of confusing because it was not watered down. Like, if you look at, like, the Brady Bunch, which was just a few years later, I think it was 68, 69, was much more bright and lended itself to that comedic palette. And
this had a dramatic feel to it, yeah, even though it was a comedy.
Way more dreary.
I mean, the kids, when they found out that they were thinking that their father's freaking out, what does the girl say? I'm going to go in and do my homework.
That was funny.
And I'm like, why is no one laughing?
Yeah.
It's like, no kid does the homework. So, yeah, I was like, okay, yeah, that's weird.
It reminds me of Christmas Vacation when Rusty is, Clark has him, wants to help unwind the lights, and he's like, oh, yeah, I got to go take care of the hog and got to do my homework and all that. They reminded me of that scene.
Exactly.
I did like the kids' one kind of high moment in the show when they just kind of stare at their father when he declares that it's their mother.
I like that, and I like the dog growling at him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And they all realize he's gone insane. He's about to murder all of them.
But they do that. Like, it's like three times they have this, the musical cue of the dog, like, oh, what is going on?
Yeah.
What's happening here?
So, as we mentioned, the Porter was not a real car. There were two companies that were named Porter. In 1900 through 1901, it only lasted for 1 year, there was the Porter Motor Company from Boston. They only made one car. It was a steam-powered car. It could go up to 25 miles per hour, and it only weighed 550 pounds. It cost $750, which today would translate to $22,474. So, expensive for the time, for sure. The second company was created by Finley Robertson Porter, who was a car engineer. He'd had a company before the Porter Company, and during World War One, the U.S. government took it over to make airplane parts. They kind of assumed control of the company, and then after the World War One was over, they shut it down. So he went to be a car engineer for another company, then he ended up starting the American British Motor Company, and they made their own car that was called the Porter, and it was a gasoline engine car. And at the time, it cost over $10,000, which in today's dollars is $125,826.
Woo.
Yeah, so it did not survive the economic depression that hit the U.S. in 1920 and 21.
Also, if you do not recall, Mark, from the beer podcast days, Porter is a type of beer as well.
That's an excellent point.
Yes.
That's an excellent point. And it kind of blurs lines with the style also known as stout.
That is true.
We had an entire episode about that.
Those are very blurred, yes.
Finley Robertson Porter actually died in 1964, so right before this show aired. He died, so fortunately, I guess for his family, they were never really associated with his family or his legacy. The show started out as a hot rod project from Norm Grabowski, who was a kind of a bit actor, and he was also known in Hollywood as a car builder. So he would build cars for shows. There's a show called 77 Sunset Strip that had a hot rod. He built that car. He was a dealer, but not in the traditional sense. He would build and sell cars to studios or rent them out for their productions. So he was kind of known in the circle for that. So he originally built this out of a Model T, a 1924 Model T with a touring body, and then added a Chevy 283 V8 engine and a Powerglide automatic transmission. I'm not a car head, so I don't know what most of those words mean. I know what an automatic transmission is, but I don't know what a V8 is.
Automatic is where you do not have to use a clutch.
I know that part, which is interesting to show. They mention the clutch over and over again, but it's an automatic transmission. And it also had miscellaneous parts from other cars in there. So then he turned around and he sold that car to the prop department for NBC, and they modified that show. George Barris, who was the prop master over there, modified the car to be a quote-unquote Porter, and they named it after their production manager, W.A. Porter. Then Grabowski actually came to the show and appeared in three episodes of My Mother, the Car.
Excuse me, Big Grabowski.
Yeah, exactly. Barris also, and he's not related to Chuck Barris from The Gong Show, who's also a CIA agent, by the way. But George
Part
Barris,
of the movie, I don't know if that's completely true.
I know, nobody knows if it's true. They actually built a replica stunt car that could have an invisible driver that was hidden underneath the rear floorboards. So,
whoa!
When you see although I don't understand how that works. Like, how do you see where the hell you're going?
Right.
That kind of sounds like something that would have come out in Viper or something. I don't know. Like many years later,
maybe this was the grandfather of Viper or Knight Rider.
True, maybe so. Yeah.
Sammy Davis Jr. actually, he had his own show came out called The Sammy Davis Jr. Show in 1966.
Generic.
And he actually released an album, and on the show, he actually covered the theme song for My Mother, the Car, and I just happen to have his cover of that.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, boy.
It's actually pretty good.
Everybody knows in the second life we all come back sooner or later. Is anything from a pussycat to a man-eating alligator? Well, you may think my story is more fiction than it's fact, but believe it or not, my mother dear decided she'd come back as a car. She's my very own guiding star. A 1928 Porter, that's my mother dear. She helps me through everything I do, and I'm so glad she's here.
That's enough of that.
Is that the most embarrassing thing you ever did?
Just, wow.
So yeah, it was really
has to be.
It was really bizarre because I looked at the album, the track listing, and it was a soundtrack for the show because it came out right when his show premiered. So it was supposed to, he basically sang a cover on every episode of his show, the Sammy Davis Jr. Show.
Okay.
So it's really bizarre that he picked My Mother the Car was the only TV theme song that he picked that I could tell. Now, a lot of the songs were, you know, made famous by Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra at the time. So there were covers of their kind of hits. But it's weird that you would pick My Mother the Car out of all of them. You can find it on YouTube, by the way, the studio version of the show.
Wow. Thank God.
And it was put up by his family or his trust or whatever. So it's, but it's only got 1,024 views on the video.
That's
so
enough. Yeah.
That's more than I ever thought would watch it.
And if you want, there's other covers.
I second that opinion.
Yes.
There's a video with 124 views that has a Yiddish man singing the My Mother the Car theme song in Yiddish, if you were so interested, in his car, by the way.
Hmm.
Did
you pull that audio?
I thought about it and I was like, we don't need another version of that song.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just, it's weird too. He's not even looking at the camera. He's kind of like looking around in his car.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre, but if you want a Yiddish version of My Mother the Car, there you go.
There you go.
It exists. Got 124
Thank God
views.
That exists.
125 because of me today.
Yeah. No techno remixes.
The director and the producer for the show, Rod Emmett, we mentioned earlier, he did a ton of TV directing after this. But it's interesting that not only was My Mother the Car a bomb, but he went on to have one of the least successful movies of all time in the 80s when he created, directed, and wrote the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Which I'm kind of surprised that didn't do okay. Like, I thought that was really popular at the
time. Have you ever seen it?
No, I've not.
It is a garbage movie.
Well, hey-o.
No. It is terrible.
Yeah.
It cost $1 million to make.
Yeah.
It only made $1.5 million at the box office.
Wow.
Okay. I've seen it a few times. I saw it when it came out back in the day, because I was a big Garbage Pail Kids fan.
That's what I just thought it would have gotten like enough people to say, oh, this is interesting, to go like,
what was the premise?
The premise is that essentially, let's see if I can explain this right. So a space trash can, a trash can from space, falls from orbit, and I don't know if they ever say if they're aliens or not. I can't remember, but this ooze comes out, and it's kind of like
TMNT Part 2.
It's sort of like TMNT mixed with Gremlins.
Okay.
Sort of. It kind of reminds you, and it had, I think, Leah Thompson was in it.
Hmm.
That was Howard the Duck. So that was a space duck.
I mean, Gremlins or Ghoulies?
It's kind of like Ghoulies, too. It's a weird blend of Howard the Duck, Ghoulies, Gremlins, and it was a fake Leah Thompson. That's what it was. They crash from space in a space trash can, and they all pop out of the trash can. And somehow in the end, after we learn about our differences, even though we're disgusting, and there's a whole lot of vomit and, fart jokes and all that is appropriate, the Garbage Pail Kids, fake Leah Thompson wants to be a fashion designer, and so they help her put on a successful fashion show, and then I think they go back into the trash can, end of movie.
They help her put on a fashion show.
Yes.
I feel like we should review this movie.
Well, if you want a good cover, cover of it, listen to our inspiration for this show, How'd This Get Made? They do an excellent
excellent
riff on The Garbage Pail Kids. Yeah. I think I've seen that movie probably 5 or 6 times just over since it came out.
That's sad.
It was out in 1986.
That's way too much of your life.
Oh, I know. I know. It's sad. So sad.
You'd be on your deathbed. Like, I wish I had a Garbage Pail Kid time back.
I could have watched The Godfather Part 2 again. All right, so Jerry Van Dyke, after, let's talk about the history of some of these act wars. Jerry Van Dyke got his start as a stand-up comedian in high school, actually. He actually, in high school, worked nightclubs and strip clubs.
Much like Mark, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I'm still working strip clubs today. I'm taking this show on the road, just a solo one-man show.
We just podcast on the center stage, and everyone's like, what the hell?
Now on the main stage.
Get out of here, we're looking for titties. What are you doing here?
Covering my mother the car.
But not covering yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah, we're nude the entire time. We slowly pull off pieces of clothing. after joining the Air Force in his late teens, I guess, he became a member of the Tops in Blue, which was an entertainment act that it was like a 100-plus act. They were kind of like the USO tour of the day.
Yeah.
And they went around entertaining the troops.
Tops in Blue, I thought it was still the strip thing. I was like, oh,
yeah. He was a power top.
Definitely could be.
One of his earliest TV appearances was in 1962 in a two-part episode of Dick Van Dyke Show, where he played Stacy Petrie, who was the comedian brother of Dick's character, Rob Petrie.
I remember that episode.
Wasn't he in from the Army? Yeah, he was. So, yeah.
Someone who is a Dick Van Dyke P1. I've definitely seen all of those episodes.
Yeah, I mean, he played the banjo, and then he did. He was on there a couple episodes, right? And he played the banjo.
He did.
A few times. But I couldn't remember if he was Air Force or Army. I think he was Army in the show.
I think he was Army, too.
Yeah. And he was like, I remember his whole bit was, if I remember right, he would, like, once he had gotten in front of people, he was aces. But he was just trying to audition for Rob.
He was, like, all nervous. Yeah.
He was all nervous and stumbling around and stuff like that. But once he got in front of people, he would, like, take the stage.
Did you watch that stuff, Jerry, back in the day? Like, the Dick Van Dyke and all, like, the Nick at Night stuff?
Sure, Nick at Night. Sure. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after My Mother the Car, he really didn't have a lot of success until he landed coach in the late 80s. Coach was a series with Craig T. Nelson, if you haven't seen it, and not Squidward, Patrick. Luther, the guy who played Patrick on SpongeBob to this day.
What are you doing under the ocean, SpongeBob?
Exactly. Yeah. That's a very good impression. You should take that on the road. Why don't you do that act at the strip club?
I should.
You could open. You can be our opener.
Next time we go up to the strip club, I'll bust that impression out.
Between My Mother the Car, he had a few failed sitcoms, but mostly he supported himself and his family by doing. He had a stage show at the Playboy Clubs in Vegas, Reno, and Atlantic City. So he just kind of toured the Playboy Club circuit. I had no idea that. One of the Van Dykes was big on the strip club circuits.
I didn't know the Playboy Club circuit was a thing.
Apparently, yeah. Okay. We had a penthouse club here in Dallas. No, we had a Playboy Club here in Dallas as well.
Did we? Okay.
And I think we still have a penthouse club here, which I didn't know penthouse was still a thing.
I'll defer to strip club Mark to let me know.
We still have a penthouse club.
I don't know.
Well, we're doing our next episode there, so you should be prepared.
I just go to the strip club you book. I don't know which ones are available.
Well, we've put all kinds of things in your orifices. So. What? He died of the My Mother the Car heart failure curse in January 2018 at the age of 86.
The curse of being associated with My Mother the Car.
You know, it's really weird, too, because he had like... I don't know where the Van Dyke brothers grew up, but, you know, he always had like a Southern accent, and Dick Van Dyke did not have a Southern accent.
They have pretty damn good genes, though. I mean, Dick is still alive, and he's still 86.
That's I'm just saying, where did the accent come from?
Yeah.
Because he had a very Arkansian accent.
I have no idea where the Van Dyke brothers
grew up. It's so strange, and we didn't bother to look that up either.
Whoa.
Fun fact.
Is that their actual last name, though?
Van Dyke, yeah.
But is that their
last name? That's a good question. Probably.
I don't know, actually. I don't know.
We did not do that. We'll do that for the episode 2 of My Mother.
We will not do that, but yeah.
Oh, God. So, fun fact about Jerry Van Dyke. He actually turned down the role of Gilligan in Gilligan's Island to do My Mother the Car.
Bad move. Bad decision, wow. Coach.
Yeah. Bad decision, coach. Exactly.
And what if the guy who did Gilligan? Hello.
Not Don Knotts.
The guy that was also in Dobie Gillis.
Bob.
Bob something. Yeah.
Bob.
I see his face, but
Bob Gilligan.
Gilligan. I wonder what he would have been like in My Mother the Car.
That's true.
I wonder if the jokes would have landed like in a certain way where people would have caught that it was funny.
Yeah.
I'm not incorrect on that, right? He was in Dobie Gillis too, right?
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
He also turned down taking over for Don Knotts in the Andy Griffith Show to do My Mother the Car.
Wow.
Yeah.
Two terrible decisions.
I don't remember who took over for Don Knotts when he left the show.
I didn't know he did that.
I can't remember. Was it Gomer Pyle that took over as because he was the mechanic for a long time on Andy Griffith. And I know he went off to do Gomer Pyle USMC. But was he the deputy for a while? Or was it another deputy? Or was it just Andy by himself? I can't remember.
I don't know. I never really watched that show, so I really
don't. I loved Gomer Pyle.
I don't know if I've seen 20 seconds of Gomer Pyle.
Really?
I watched the Gomer Pyle a lot.
Did you? Okay. I just never have.
I was a huge fan of Gomer Pyle back in the day. Okay. Not so much Andy Griffith, but Gomer Pyle.
I unfortunately watched a bunch of F Troop, but I did not watch
F Troop. Yeah.
Well, jeez. Whatever Nick at Night had on, it's they did not have Gomer Pyle on. They had F-Troop on.
Big fan of Petticoat Junction also?
No, that was not on there either.
Petticoat Junction.
Wow. So Ann Southern, who played Mother, she was, as mentioned, a star of radio, stage, TV, and film.
Mother.
She began her career in the late 1920s doing bit parts in films. In 1930, she made her Broadway debut and worked her way up to starring roles. In 1939, she got cast by MGM, got an MGM contract as a Brooklyn showgirl. And then in 1953, she moved into television. She had the star of her own sitcom called Private Secretary, which ran for 5 seasons on CBS.
Apparently, that Brooklyn Showgirl bit like spawned like 4 or 5 movies.
Oh, wow.
So she actually did pretty well with
Interesting.
That.
Interesting. So the series aired for 5 seasons on CBS and got her 3 Emmy nominations. In 1987, she appeared in her final film, The Wales of August, starring Betty Davis and Lillian Gish. Is that related to Annabeth Gish?
I don't know.
Why don't you do that research? And she actually
did not tell me that in the article I pulled this from. So
she actually had an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress in for her role in the film. I've never heard of that movie before. And she also died of the My Mother the Car heart failure.
Apparently, if you're in My Mother the Car, you die of heart failure. Yeah, that's the deal.
It's the horn.
It's the horn, yes. Fun fact, she has 2 stars in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, 1 for TV and 1 for film.
You have 2 stars.
And another fun fact, when she was doing a production of Everyone Loves Opal in 1974 in Jacksonville, Florida.
The prequel to Everyone Loves Raymond.
Yeah. Exactly. That was his mother. Or his great-grandmother.
Exactly.
A fake tree fell on her back during the production and damaged her vertebrae and damaged the nerves in her legs.
Oh, indeed.
As a result, it required multiple hospitalizations where she was put in a traction each time. And for the rest of her life, she had to walk while wearing a back brace. And she had to walk as I wrote, yeah. And she had to walk with a cane due to numbness in her feet.
So it was a fake tree that fell?
A fake tree that fell on her
so
back.
So was it really, I mean, was it a real injury? I mean, a fake tree fell on her?
Fake tree, real injury.
She got Greg Abbott.
Of all places to, like, get injured, though, in a, like, as off-Broadway as you can get, Jacksonville, Florida. In like
I was going
to
say, of all places to get Greg Abbott, yeah. It's got to be Jacksonville, Florida. That's terrible.
Yeah. Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah. Greg Abbott.
That's a book. Abbott in Florida. Abbott in Florida.
You know the reference,
which,
though. You know
which, those who don't know, Greg Abbott is our stupid governor who got paralyzed because a tree fell on him. While he was jogging
one day. And he made a bunch of money by suing people.
Right.
That he now has gone ahead and voted to not allow people to sue for the same thing.
Exactly.
That he made a bunch of money off
of. He now likes to oppress other people the same way he made his fortune.
Yep,
so.
Exactly.
Maggie Wife, also known as... Maggie Pierce, also known as Wife. She was not Maggie Wife. She really didn't do much.
You said Maggie Wife.
Maggie Wife, Naggy Wife, Maggie Pierce. She didn't do much. She was a model.
She did very little, actually. Yeah.
Oh, she did. She had one other role after My Mother the Car, and that was The Fastest Guitar Alive in 1967. Yeah. She died of the My Mother the Car curse in April of 2010 of natural causes.
It was probably heart failure. I just want to say.
Yeah. Died of bad roles.
Yeah. Of no roles. She was probably homeless.
I've nothing since 67. Yeah.
Before she went into acting and modeling, she was a nurse at Bellevue Hospital. She trained for 3 years before she went into the entertainment industry. Avery Schreiber, we're just going to go ahead and say that he is the uncle or a grandfather, some relation of Liv Schreiber and Pablo Schreiber. So he came to prominence in the 1960s in a comedy duo with Jack Burns, and then went to do a lot of television sitcoms and advertisements. He got really famous. He actually had a second life in Doritos commercials.
I was going to say,
he's a
Doritos guy, yeah.
Yeah, which he maintained. I watched some of them today, and he never has a speaking part. He's always playing a generic Italian guy.
Yeah.
One of them's at like a...
That's a Dorito.
Well, he doesn't even have a line. It's just him with his disgusting mustache, and it's for cheese Doritos and ranch Doritos, and he's always playing a stereotypical Italian, like running a cheese shop or at a wine festival or whatever. So there's that. he was a regular guest star on, not Barney Miller, Chico and the Man, and he was actually a guest star all the time on The Match Game. Love The Match Game.
Chico and the Man.
And he was in a first season episode of The Muppet Show. He also died of heart failure, and he had a heart attack.
That is the My Mother the Car curse. Your heart is going to fail you.
It is.
Eventually.
He died of a heart attack, his second heart attack in January 2002. Fun fact, he has a theater named after him in North Hollywood called the Avery Shriver
Doritos Theater.
No, Playhouse. And another fun fact, he had his first heart attack in 1994 due to diabetes and had triple bypass surgery.
God, that's a fun fact.
That is so fun.
Wow. I had so much fun hearing that.
So I found some interesting notes about TV in 1965 because this was kind of a landmark year. As we said, like a lot of things were in transition culturally. So color TV was kind of making its first big splash into the wide broadcast industry. So the first football game broadcast in color happened this year on Thanksgiving Day between the Baltimore Colts and the Detroit Lions. The Beatles made their fourth and final appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show to promote their album Help. They would actually stop touring after 1965, and then they would break up in 1970.
Indeed.
The Charlie Brown Christmas special premiered for the first time in December on CBS, and Motorola introduced the first rectangular color tube TV to the mass market in 1965.
Oh, so they had widescreen back then.
I don't know if it's widescreen. I think
rectangular. You would think.
Yeah, a lot of times they were mostly square, and then they even had like circular TVs.
Yeah, that was odd,
which was weird. So I don't normally go into Amazon reviews because I love how this gets made, and this is kind of their bit. But because when I was looking up the Amazon reviews, just trying to see what score they would give it, there were some real standouts here. So there was the first one from Gregory Godbout in 2014, who says, "Old days, remember the show? 5 stars."
There was
Timothy also in 2014.
That was the entire review.
Timothy in 2014 said, "Great product with great transaction. Cannot believe the series is only 1 year. Hope they will consider doing a season 2." He wrote this in 2014.
Indeed.
What?
The very dead Jerry Van Dyke will not be back.
Well, he was still alive in 2014.
True, yeah.
To be fair. I don't think they're going to do a season 2 in 2014, though, of a show that failed in 1965.
I mean, that car would have totally been gone by that time. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And finally, this is the best. It's a little long. This is from Agape Music.
Or Agape.
Or Agape. Yeah. Jerry Van Dyke was in the Tops in Blue, the Power Tops.
True. He was a power bottom.
Agape Music says, "They tell us which cars are no good, the Edsel. They tell us which presidents are good speakers, well, you know. They tell us which TV shows are and were good, and sadly, too often we just believe them. Well, they missed for almost 50 years.
There's so many quotes in this.
I know. Whoever they are. My Mother the Car is one of the best shows we've ever watched. Both of us laughed out loud. I guess the lesson is don't listen to the critics and cynics. How many times have you based your opinion on what they tell you to believe? Think for yourself, for God's sake. Jerry Van Dyke, in parentheses. If you're reading this, consider yourself vindicated. You're as funny as any comic ever, and this show is as funny as anything you've ever done." That's just sad.
Wow.
Not true either, but yes.
"We love you, and now after 50 years of listening to the naysayers, we made our own decision and bought this set. We formed our own opinion and love this show. Just plain fun. Great music throughout, great stars, great lines, jokes, and some of the best comedic timing ever. Thank you." So they bought it for $99.99.
That's, wow.
That's an interesting review.
And I'm guessing they ended in a murder-suicide.
Yeah. That's,
Around a photo of Jerry Van Dyke in the car.
That's right. That's right. All right. Show's premiering in 1965. Lost in Space, Green Acres, Gidget, I Spy, The Wild Wild West, Hogan's Heroes, I Dream of Jeannie, Days of Our Lives, and Get Smart, also by Burns and Hayward, as we mentioned.
Yep.
And shows ending in 1965, the first run of The Outer Limits, Johnny Quest, the first run of The Price is Right, and the Jack Benny program.
I did not know The Price is Right ever ended.
Yeah, it started out in 1956 on ABC or NBC. And then it moved to CBS.
Okay.
And it ran for starting in 1963, and then it ended. And then they brought it back later, I think later in the 60s.
CBS, obviously, still running it.
CBS still runs it today. Wow. Yeah. So, final thoughts about My Mother the Car. Jerry?
I'm just aghast. No,
You're agape? Agape?
You're agape.
Hey, that's for a
different podcast. Yeah, put that away.
That's for a different podcast.
Yeah.
Join us at the Penthouse Key Club.
I'm glad we're at Mark's house and not mine.
Actually, join us at the Eagle. No, this was a very funny. It was funny just watching again the whole reincarnation thing. Was just like, okay, how did that get through? Okay, especially with the censors at the time.
Yeah.
So wow,
I agree. It was. I was surprised the whole concept of reincarnation that it was promoted as heavily as it was. I mean, we're only a few years from, like, the Beatles going to India,
mm-hmm.
you know, which kind of prompted their breakup at the end.
True.
With George Harrison going to India, especially, and spending a lot of time there. And so Eastern mysticism has always, and kind of, we had Bewitched at the time, so magic and Eastern mysticism were kind of making their way into culture more heavily. But considering how conservative culture still was.
And that's what I'm talking about, as far as how conservative the culture was. I mean, it was just one of those things where, like, okay. That's just very interesting that it was on TV. I'm surprised that I was trying to look up to see if there was any like protests about the show being on. I didn't see anything, so I was like,
And we were at the dawn of the hippie movement and beatniks, and so it was a real strange time culturally. I mean, we had it was just like all these weird magical concepts were making their way into popular medium, like Bewitched and Mr. Ed and
you think Charmed would have done well back then?
Charmed might have done okay, actually.
You think?
Huh? I don't know. Three hot witches. Yeah. I mean, Bewitched was a success with one hot.
Any hot witches? Yeah, that would have been interesting, though.
Would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Three hot witches solving crime?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Why not?
I Dream of Jeannie worked. And
Charlie's Angels was a success just a few years ago.
Obviously, Barbara Eden was like the hottest ever back then.
Yeah, she was super hot. Yeah, absolutely. Elizabeth Montgomery on Bewitched.
True.
She's a hot witch, so why not?
Not as hot as Barbara Eden.
No, not as hot as Barbara Eden. Yeah. Barbara Eden's hot was hard to beat.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So, Dustin, final thoughts?
I'm really kind of surprised that the show was not edited with a laugh track.
Yeah.
I think if the laugh track had been included, I really think it would have actually made the show much better.
I agree.
Normally, I don't like laugh tracks, but I think it was totally necessary in the show. And I think Jerry Van Dyke obviously had a lot of talent. So if he was used better and there was a better script, it actually might have been a decent show. I don't really know these other co-actors, like his wife and everything. Even, you know, fake Liev Schreiber, like, I think he was okay for a first episode.
Yeah.
I cannot believe he was lasting like 20 episodes in or whatever it was, or maybe the whole series. That was an okay thing. They could have cut that back a little bit.
Yeah.
But overall,
him as a constant foil was...
Yeah.
It's almost like he was kind of like the Gladys...
Yeah.
What was her name of Bewitched? Gladys, the neighbor...
Yeah.
Was her name also Crabtree? Gladys Crabtree or something?
I don't know.
Like
I don't know her last name.
She was the one that kept seeing Bewitched do her magic and would rant to the husband.
Yeah.
She's doing it again.
Yeah, and the husband never believed her.
Never believed her, yeah.
But, I mean, overall, as a show, the worst ever? I don't know. You know, it's really bad.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad. It's the worst thing we've done on this podcast.
So you agree it's worse than Heil, Honey, I'm Home, the Hitler sequel.
I would say it actually is. I mean, even though that was really terrible, this is even worse than that. And although both of those had catchy theme songs.
True. Just one was about the Holocaust.
Exactly. I guess my final thoughts would be... this is not a show I would recommend anyone ever actually watching. Yeah. Unless you just really want to get some of the pop culture references when people make fun of it, maybe you go back and watch it.
Yeah.
But as a quality show, no, don't watch it.
Yeah, I agree. I can't believe that. I would love to know what Jerry Van Dyke's reasons were turning down Gilligan's Island to play Gilligan. The only thing I can think is...
Well, he was leading this, though.
Yeah, exactly. Was my point. Was he was top banana in this, whereas in... Gilligan's Island was more of an ensemble show, which worked for them, I think. I mean, it's not like I'm a big Gilligan's Island fan, but, you know, compared to this, it was...
Still a much better show.
Still comedic gold.
And the same thing with Andy Griffith. He would have been an ensemble.
Yeah, that's true. He would have been second banana to Andy and Aunt May and, what's his name, little Ronnie Howard.
True.
Of the time. And probably Gomer Pyle before he went out to do, before he joined the Marine Corps. So, I mean, I guess he wanted to be a star. I don't know. He always seemed better as a character actor to me, kind of a supporting character. Even in Dick Van Dyke, he was great. But
even in Coach, he was a supporting character.
Luther, yeah. Which, by the way, have you ever seen, if you go out to YouTube, there is a video of they removed all the laugh tracks from Coach.
No, I have not seen
an episode where Jerry Van Dyke is going off on a rant, and it makes him look like he's going insane, like from My Mother the Car.
That is so unfair, because they also do that to Friends.
Yeah.
They'll remove the laugh track from Friends, and it's like really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, which proves our point that My Mother the Car needed a laugh track.
Laugh track.
Have you noticed people getting bigger? Not just in the weight room. You should see the size of the guys we got planned for us next year. I mean, they are huge. Outgrowing the planet. My day, I was considered big. Your day, you were a big guy. And Dauber, when you played for us, you were the biggest guy we had. I just saw 10 guys got feet bigger than you. Wondering where it all ends. I mean, if people keep getting bigger, then, you know, houses gotta get bigger. Towns are gonna get bigger. I mean, it just doesn't stop. We're going to have to feed these giants. Where are we going to get the food? We're not going to get the food because there's not going to be land to grow the food on. Huge people running around looking for something to eat. It's just a matter of time before people start eating each other. It only leads to one thing. People just keep eating until there's one person left. 30 to 40 foot fat guy.
And our final question that I'd like to ask is, would you like to see the show remade? Jerry?
Again, if we make it like we like you were talking before, where basically we at the end of the movie we find out that he's the actual car. He actually is the one who killed the family. Yeah. He's the actual car, and it's like, okay, is this science fiction thing like going? Oh wow,
yeah.
But it can't have that peppy song. We'll have something, yeah. something. trying to think of the
more morose.
Yeah,
so. Yeah, something depressing,
something beaten down. Sad, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe have, I don't know, maybe have The Cure do a cover or Marilyn Manson or something. Something dark and depressive. And yeah.
We'll have Trent Reznor do a cover.
Sure, there you go.
There you go.
Why not? Did Charmed do this one also?
Sure. Mark, you go ahead next.
Yeah, I don't want to see this again. I mean, I do wonder, was this the inspiration for Knight Rider? And was this the inspiration for Stephen King's Christine?
I think it definitely was an inspiration for Knight Rider, actually.
I think it had to be.
Yeah.
I mean... I just don't want to see. I don't think I want to see this concept. At least in the form of a TV show. I don't. This is the same thing I have about Liv Schreiber. same complaint I have about doing Knight Rider as a TV show. You have to have, or Airwolf, even we talked about. You have to live with the conceit that the vehicle has to be a major plot point of every episode. It has to be majorly involved because it's the spoke around which the show like orbits. Right. It's. So I don't think that's necessarily – you need a more varied platform. I think, as I mentioned before when we were talking about Airwolf, the new Voltron show on Netflix, Voltron does it very well.
But Airwolf actually would make more sense.
Airwolf would, but I think both would make more sense as a movie because you only need 2 hours to fill.
True.
And you can break up the action into vehicle and human action segments. But doing that for 22 episodes or even 13 episodes, that's asking a lot.
That's a lot.
For a wacky premise. Even a serious premise, I think that's a lot.
And I will also agree that this should not be remade. Maybe like a one-off movie would be kind of funny. Make it totally ridiculous and like a, I don't know, maybe they'll have like Jason Segel write it or something. Somebody that's like ridiculously funny and just would make it so stupid, it might be really funny.
Right.
But as a series, no way. No way.
I agree. I just don't think it works. I think as a, you know, when Stephen King did it as a horror movie, I think it worked for Christine.
Sure,
although he did the book and then... I think it was John Carpenter that did the movie. Whatever. I think it worked as that concept because it comes back as a vengeful spirit.
Sure,
you know, that's murdering teens. I think that works. I think that's a great concept. But as a benevolent, a little bit of troublemaking car, you know.
Like your happy premise, mother? No.
Yeah, I just don't think it works. I don't want to see this ever remade. And, you know, this is one that could be buried for all time.
Yes.
Underneath Heil Honey, I'm Home. Which
is, it's funny it's worse than that because that was terrible.
Ironically funny. That it is worse than Heil Honey, the home, the sitcom about Hitler and his wacky Jewish neighbors.
Is it worse than Jerry Springer? Yes, it is.
Yes,
Jerry
it is.
Springer was actually amusing.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
And it served a purpose. This is worse than that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that does it for another very special episode of The Pilot Project. Jerry, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
If you're interested in the Dallas, the North Texas craft beer scene.
Not related to Jerry Springer.
Not.
No, not Jerry Springer.
You can follow him at @NTX_beer on Twitter or Instagram. If you're in Dallas and you're into the North Texas craft beer scene, go for it. Follow him there. If you're not in the North Texas beer scene, you probably don't care. But
true, good
if
point.
You're into it, follow him. We'll probably see Jerry around here and definitely all the future beer events that we go to in the future.
Yeah, indeed.
Thanks for being on the show.
Very generic. We'll probably see Jerry around here. But
it's very generic. Whatever. All right. Well, that's it for another very special episode of The Pilot Project. The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. We have new episodes every Friday. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.